Hey, before we get to me and Gene tonight, I wanted to take a few minutes and speak to my old buddy, Brian Thompson. How's it going, Brian?
Long-time personal, close personal, long-time friend here. Oh. Old buddy. I don't know about the old part. Oh, I mean, I'm still young, brother.
No, I didn't say old. I said old. O-L. So, yeah, that's...
Oh, okay. Olé.
You know, here's something that that I wanted to mention that me we started doing Shooting the Shiznit back in 2008. And then came back. It was pretty much just a little over 2 years ago. You were the first guest when we came back. So we're kind of celebrating an anniversary, and we're not, because we started in 2008, but we were gone for about 6 years. But I want to thank you for everything you've done for the podcast and for the old website. You've always been there for me when I needed you to talk about something, or just, I mean, we're friends also, so you give me the old pat on the back, or give me the, you know, or when something bad happens, when people don't include me on a poster, you're always good about telling me that, so I appreciate it. So, okay, let's not say anything else.
Sexy boy.
There we go. So here's what I want to talk to you about, because I can't remember anything. I have a horrible memory. But you were with MCW, which is the subject of our episode today. And so tell me what, you know, how did MCW start? How did you get a job? And we also know is that where you actually met Bobby Eaton?
It is. As far as where did MCW start for me, or as far as the company itself?
Yeah, give me a background of why did we have MCW and we had Power Pro going at the same time. I've heard Randy say a couple of things. Talk to me about that.
I don't, you know, I'm not an expert in that. That would probably be Randy or Jerry Lawler as far as how things develop. But from my understanding, Randy maybe at a time where they weren't on the same page. Terry Golden is running KAW Wrestling in Memphis, and so it was an opportunity for Lawler to side with a different promotion in the area and rechristen it, obviously, as Memphis Championship Wrestling and take the developmental deal there. Sometime, I think, in 2000 or right around 2000, maybe, 99, 2000, something like that. And then eventually everybody made up, and then the two promotions were running together. MCW had some TV on UPN, and then also KAIT in Jonesboro, the legendary Channel 8 in Jonesboro, Arkansas, but bundled with Power Pro on the live Saturday morning on WMC-TV5. So then I think, if my understanding is correct, at the time MCW was responsible for all the house show and touring and that sort of thing, and Power Pro had the Saturday morning TV, and then, of course, MCW had its Saturday night or whatnot TV. So real interesting time in the Memphis area. So long story short, I know we're on a fixed time frame here, but I was working, I just started the business in May of 2000 and was working for a company in St. Louis. Noticed that MCW was planning to come to Kennett, Missouri at the American Legion, another historic little wrestling venue for those of us in the Mid-South.
Oh, yeah.
But we're coming to town, got a hold of Kelly Warner, there's a name from the past for you, who is kind of handling the local promotion for it. Long story short, didn't get to happen. Missouri State Athletic Commission, some issues there. They moved it to Rector, Arkansas a week or two later. I put out some flyers for the event. Got to meet Golden and some of the talent at that particular event in Rector, Arkansas. Gave them a video of myself, you know, ring announcing, was trying to get into MCW. After bugging Terry a few times on the phone, leaving messages, I got the call to be in Ripley in Covington, Tennessee on a Friday and Saturday night. Not sure if that's the right order of the day or of the venues, but those are the two towns for a tryout with MCW. If everything goes well, they'll add me to the crew, and I guess everything went well because I got added to the crew. Ironically enough, at that very tryout weekend was Bobby Eaton's first weekend as a trainer with Memphis Championship Wrestling, and so that's how we met. I went up to shake his hand, you know, and said, he goes, "Hi, I'm Bobby Eaton." And my response is, "Yeah, I know." So
he did me the same way like 20 years earlier in Philadelphia. I was being introduced by Cornette to him. And he was like, "I want you to meet Bobby." And so I went over and Bobby goes, "Bobby Eaton." And I was like, "Yeah, nice to meet you." I was like, "Yeah, like I didn't know who the fuck best. You were." Yeah, yeah.
That's in that Bobby.
That's
Bobby never
him.
changed, man. He
No.
never did. But that's my MCW story as far as how I got into the company, and so it was some of the most fun times, even to this day, that I've ever had.
Well, you was there, and there's some guys that become huge, huge stars. Who there at the time that you were watching it as a fan and also being part of the business, did you say this
Yeah.
guy's going to be awesome and he turned out awesome? That's the one thing I want to ask you. And also number two,
Sure.
which guy you said he's going to be awesome and he just never did make anything of himself?
Oh, well, I think my answer is going to be pretty simple on that. And I'll preface the second one, but the first one about who did I see that I saw star potential in and he ended up living up to it is going to be Daniel Bryan, your WWE champion now. Of course, he wrestled as American Dragon Bryan Danielson back in those days, and man, they were just having matches that very small crowds would see. Of course, they were on developmental deals, so they weren't living and dying off the gate. But you'd see American Dragon against Spanky, against Joey Abs, against the Lance K. I mean, it was just matches that probably Meltzer would give him 4 and 5 stars if he actually saw the matches, and maybe 30 or 40 people in Corning, Arkansas saw them. But so Daniel Bryan, I'd say, would be the first. And of course, the unfortunate one that I really thought would have a run is Steve, who's your daddy, Bradley? And he didn't. So very unfortunate. Of course, he's no longer with us. And man, and looking at a picture of that crew, too many of them, even just that many years ago, are not with us today. From the 2001 MCW roster, some went on to WWE success, and then but they're no longer with us. It's unfortunate, but yeah, Daniel Bryan is a star, and then Steve Bradley's the one that I think should have had a run and didn't get that chance.
I actually saw some of the best matches, I think, live, and this includes, I was fortunate enough to see Flair and Steamboat live once. Was Reckless Youth against Steve Regal? Some of the two or three
Yeah.
of those in Blytheville, Arkansas, just unbelievable. Reckless Youth is one of those guys that, to me,
Yeah.
if he was in today's business, because of the smaller guy, he would probably
Oh.
be huge right now. So, all right, man,
Yeah.
I want to
I
thank you
didn't.
for. Go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say Youth had already left the territory by the time I got there, so I didn't get to be around him. But man, it was a loaded crew. I got a mark out moment to admit. Maybe a couple of weeks into my run there, we had done a show at the Convocation Center, main evented by Kurt Angle and Triple H, and yeah, that was pretty cool stuff. So I can't, especially at that time when they were 2001. Those guys were on top of the business in their
Right.
prime. So.
Let me, like I said, my memory's horrible, but didn't you tell me, like, when you left there, they did this deal where they all did their finisher move on you?
Not too long before we left, there was a it was one of the small Arkansas towns, maybe Paragould or Rector. A couple of weeks before that, they had Seven, who ended up being Kevin Thorne, slam me out of nowhere, and they called it in the ring, and then they decided to mess with me some more. And so all of a sudden, anyway, I ended up taking a power bomb from Joey Abs, an enziguri from Daniel Bryan, a couple things from Joey Matthews, Christian York, power bomb. A couple different people power bomb me. Yeah, I know sold that stuff.
Thanks, Brian, for joining us. We're going to get to a commercial and then right straight to the show.
Have you used the Cash App from Square? If not, you can download it and get $5. That's right, $5 for using it the first time. Use this code LJTPLJH. One more time, that's LJTPLJH. If you like this episode and would like to sponsor it, send cash to code $BTSTS. That's $BTSTS on the new Cash App that you just downloaded.
Shawn Michaels dubbed me the American Dragon, with or without the mask. and I donned the mask in the tradition of the tiger masks, in the tradition of Jushin Liger, in the tradition of Wild Pegasus, who most people in the United States know as Chris Benoit. Those guys spent their times in Japanese dojos learning their craft, perfecting their craft through hard work and discipline. Joey Abs, tonight I face you in the main event, and tonight I'm going to eat you up because you don't have any discipline. You're like most of the wrestlers here in Memphis who go out to bars and get drunk every night. Meanwhile, I'm at home studying my film, thinking about holds, thinking about my match the next night. And when you come in, you're all tired. All these wrestlers are all tired. They've been hanging out with their fans. They've been drinking. They're hungover. All that kind of stuff. Well, I'm focused. I'm focused on the holds. I'm focused on what I need to do. And tonight, Joey Abs, I'm going to teach you about discipline. I'm going to teach you what it's like to wrestle a man who can counter every hold. I'm going to teach you what it's like to take an elbow right to the jaw. And I'm going to teach you what discipline is all about. And tonight, Joey Abs, you are going to cry like a baby, and I am going to waste you.
All right, we're live from STS Studios for Was It Really That Good? With my old buddy Gene Jackson. Gene, where you at tonight?
I'm right here in the homestead in Coleman, Alabama.
Oh, there we go. Alabama. Roll Tide. And I know you was fired up this past Sunday. They had the Super Bowl.
They did? Oh, we was watching Sopranos all day. I had no idea.
You know I love you for that. I'm a huge NFL fan, but I crack up during all the big games. I'm just waiting for you to post something. So that's the awesome part about it. Even when friends are not fans, you can see the post. I seen a post today, and I know you're good friends with Memphis Monroe, and I just want to know, right? You can tell us exclusively right here, is Memphis Monroe going to AEW? I want to know.
He won't tell me. He said he's got a pretty lucrative offer on the table, but he said he doesn't want to jump up and just sign the first thing that comes his way. He wants to give Vince a chance to counter offer. So we'll see how that plays out in the next couple of weeks, I guess.
And if you get a chance, go ahead and tell him he's always welcome here. We're looking for – we already booked all the way till April, so maybe we could get Memphis Monroe. I know he's been associated with a lot of things in professional wrestling. I'd really like to talk to him. But maybe in April we'll have Memphis Monroe. But now, speaking of Memphis, I did a little research on this one. We're from Manila, Arkansas, Community Center, and this is Memphis Championship Wrestling. Just if you like this show, me and Gene actually talk about different shows. Was it really that good? The most downloaded episode of this was episode 166 when we went over that ECW TV show. But we grabbed shows from in the past, and you know everyone says, oh, it was so much better back in the day. We have kind of found out it's not so much better back in the day. But last time we also reviewed Power Pro. We both liked it. So I thought we'd go to Memphis Championship Wrestling. Now, we had a segment with Brian Thompson before me and you started talking. And Brian didn't really know the full details, and I don't remember shit. So Jerry Lawler and Randy Hell's action, this is during the time they made up. But they broke up, didn't they? What happened there that made Memphis Championship Wrestling become a thing?
You know I knew that story back in the day, but I was struggling watching the show trying to remember. I know there was a falling out with Lawler and Randy Hales at one point, and Lawler sided with Terry Golden, who then transformed KW into Memphis Championship Wrestling. And I'm going to be honest, I did see a lot of Power Pro, you know, back in that time because we got Channel 5 here in Mississippi, but I didn't have the UPN channel, so I never really saw Memphis Championship Wrestling. I saw a lot of KW tape trading years later. But this is really one of only maybe three Memphis Championship Wrestling episodes I've ever seen in my life. So it was interesting.
Oh wow! I was able to see it. So it was a cool thing. It was the funny thing was that you know I can't remember. I know Lawler and Randy broke up, and I know eventually Randy will probably tell it on his podcast, or hell, I might bring him on here and see if he'll come on. You know, he didn't used to like being interviewed by me, so who knows? We'll bring him on and find out. But they broke up, and then, like you said, KW, I would like to know why they picked Terry Golden. One of those things that, you know, it might be Bruce Prichard to talk to about that. But why they picked Terry Golden to do it, which I thought was a strange pick, I guess just because he did have MCW going. Brian had started working for MCW the very month that this show was out, and Bobby Eaton had started too. It's kind of weird. And I wanted to make note, in Manila, Arkansas Community Center, I'm going to make more note of some of these places they were wrestling, but I actually wrestled. I don't know if I wrestled. I think I might have been on a book tour for Ron Horn in that actual building. So there's all kind. Yeah. So I worked for Ron Horn. I think I was doing my book tour, and I went in and sold the book, and may have helped set up chairs or something. But it was a Ron Horn show in Manila, Arkansas. So let's get to the show. The opening clips of was Pete Gass against Steve Bradley with Victoria and Steve Bradley's corner. What I liked about this, Gene, is, and I'll talk about this at the end also, was these clips kind of made me want to go back and find that show also, because that match looked hell of a good, like a really good match.
Yeah, and that's not something you really associate with Pete Gass. I guess that was one of the things that stood out to me about watching this episode, is seeing the members of the Mean Street Posse, or at least especially Pete Gass and Joey Abs, with gear and actually looking like wrestlers and looking like they were, you know, starting to pick up some things. And it was a way better match. If you'd have told me, hey, you're going to watch Pete Gass against Steve Bradley, I'd have been like, ugh. But either Pete Gass had learned a lot by then, or Steve Bradley really was as talented as everybody says. Because, like you said, it was a good match.
I got to go back and try to find that. That looked like a real good match. And I remember, Brian mentioned right at the first of the show that there was so many good matches that people, like 30 people in the crowd. We might have had 45 in this crowd or 50. The clips looked awesome. I try to find it. We also, right following that, we had a great Daniel Bryan interview, which all the listeners will hear it before me and you come on. So I thought that was just awesome. I was like, hell, he was doing better interviews back then. I mean, he's been really on a tear lately, but that was a decent interview for a guy who hadn't been in the business for a while.
Oh, yeah, and especially for a guy who was not known for his promo ability, especially at that early stage of his career. I was surprised by it as well. When we first came on camera, I was like, oh, what's this going to be? But I was pleasantly surprised.
I was doing the same thing. We start out with David Jett trying to interview Gass, and Pete Gass goes into the dressing room to go after Daniel Bryan. But what was your thoughts about David Jett?
I liked him, and as I was listening to this show, I was like, what has become of David Jett? I haven't heard that name in years, and he doesn't turn up anywhere. You know, he doesn't pop up on any of these shows or conventions or anything like that. So I was curious what happened to him. But I always liked his announcing on KW. And like I said, I didn't see much of the Memphis Championship, but I thought he did a good job here from what I saw and heard.
I like David a lot. I thought he was underrated. I remember when Kevin Lawler was trying to do TV in Memphis a few years back, and we worked the same schedule, so I talked to him a lot on the phone. I was hotel. He was doing the floor thing. And he was really trying – he was going to bring David Jett in to do TV if he did TV, because he really liked him. I liked him too. Also, this commercial that we've seen about 100 times during
– Oh, Jesus.
I want to know that you ordered the Going South collection, right?
I didn't, but oh, my God. I mean, you would think you'd have had to just to get him to shut up about it. Although – what was the deal with the one set of commercials that had the audio commentary for the Pete Gass Steve Bradley match, but it was through the promos telling the towns they were coming to, the Going South commercial, all that crap had the sound of David Jett describing Pete Gass versus Steve Bradley, which I thought was quite the production snafu there.
Well, it could have been one of those old VHSs, too. You know that shit. You never knew what was going to happen.
Was David Jett a radio guy? Is that what his background was in? Because he had a radio voice for sure.
I want to think he was, but, you know, I really liked him. I just don't think he got a chance. You know, you know this, but anybody that Lawler didn't like, you know, if he didn't like you, you didn't last long. So Jerry might not have liked him as an announcer. Jerry was fond of Lance, but I heard him say bad things about Lance too. One of the first times I ever met Jerry Lawler, I was around him backstage, and he was real upset with Lance's performance that Saturday because Lance didn't put over it was his feud against Brickhouse Brown. And you want to think about my mindset at that time. Lance was the greatest announcer ever, and to hear Jerry Lawler saying, man, he really fucked, you know, he didn't say fucked up, but he really messed up that show. That was just really weird for me. So Spanky with Jason Sensation against Lance Cade. Spanky did a promo, which was pretty good also. Man, Lance Cade reminded me so much of Barry Windham.
Yes, most definitely. A young Barry Windham. And, you know, in this time frame, I really thought, I mean, and he did have success. I mean, he went to WWE and he was tag team champions with Trevor Murdoch and all that. But I really thought back in this day and age that he was really going to have a much bigger career than what he turned out to have.
Him coming off the ropes, that's what was scary to me. I know he's not a Wyndham, but the way he came off the ropes, he ducked a clothesline or something. I was like, damn, they could have made him one of the Wyndham kids and everyone wouldn't have said a word. Spanky used a chair, and so apparently there was no DQ. Well,
that was my biggest note about this match. Was going to say, am I the only one that was just completely disturbed by this the chair coming in and out of the match? And David Jett even acknowledged it as best he could and tried to cover it up a little bit. But I just I don't know. That just bothered the shit out of me for some reason.
I didn't like it because Jet didn't have a description to why. He said because they went late night, looks like they're going to let a little bit more hardcore. He went on to mention that with Biddy Little in the next match. But Kay did a kind of like a little sloppy choke slam from the top rope. But it was still, I thought it was a good match. I enjoyed it. At one point, he said something about being really pissed off, which I thought was hilarious. So I think because this show was targeted toward the late night, they wanted to get a little bit of cussing in there. The next segment was kind of weird, but do you know who – it was a person was in the bathroom with Victoria, and I don't know who that person was.
I didn't recognize them either. I'm not sure who that was.
That was creepy. That was real creepy. I actually met Victoria during this time. So sweet. She was just a sweet girl. And then met her at StarCast and said, do you remember me, Wynn? I knew she wouldn't, but it was really funny. She laughed about it. No, I don't remember. You know, she was at MCW. But she said she had a fantastic time at MCW and learned a lot. The next match we had, Stoney McGraw. Who the hell was Stoney McGraw?
I don't know. At first glance, he looked like that guy Slammer that used to wrestle in Boonville and around Mississippi, who was just the drizzling shits. And I thought that's who it was for a minute, and then I realized it wasn't. But the guy was on par with Slammer. I mean, he was
horrible, just horrible. That one of the funny spots. He worked Biddy Little in a hardcore match, and I thought it was hilarious when the trash can rolled on his back. That was just hilarious. And then our referee, the hardcore referee, which came from, wasn't this the whole thing with KW? Was where Alki Hall started, right?
Yeah. I like Al. I've got to work with him quite a bit over the years, and he's hilarious. You know, behind the scenes in the dressing room, and it was always really good at playing that part of Alki Holic, the referee, the hardcore referee, that is.
He's always, I've met him, I haven't actually worked anything with him, but been backstage with him, just a super nice guy, always shakes your hand and say, you know, welcome to the show kind of thing. I like the, Biddy Little did a pretty leg drop from top rope on a trash can. I like that. Real quick match. He got a kind of a good pop at the end. They were playing some kind of I'm going to fuck you out there in the middle of the woods music, but that scared me. I was looking for the pig and telling me how pretty my mouth was. Biddy Little has always been that guy in that area, either in Arkansas or Mississippi, just a kind of a solid worker, but never like he's not the guy you want to put the belt on or anything like that. The funny thing is, they mentioned some of these towns in here. I ran a Rector, Arkansas one time, and me and Biddy Little almost got in a fist fight.
Really?
So Psycho stood in the middle of us to keep us from fighting, but I don't think either one of us wanted to fight. I think if he had a video of it, you'd be laughing your ass off, because I didn't know how tough Biddy Little was, and he didn't know how tough I was. So he could have probably whipped my ass, but, you know, the 80-year-old man that lives across the street can pretty much whip my ass. But we had to bluff in on him, and they had to pull us apart, because it was just a stupid thing for me and him to get into it, and we actually have talked since then. I may have him on the show. He's interesting, and but he also seems to be in trouble a lot, so I don't know.
He pops up over Mississippi from time to time, and sometimes he's Biddy Little, and sometimes he's Ricky Rodeo, some cowboy gimmick or some such. So
he did the Ricky Rodeo gimmick. I think it was in Dyesburg area where he did that, and it was his kind of more of his baby face. He was over like crazy. I mean, he could just he did this deal where he moved. It's kind of like Eddie Guerrero did with his shoulders, you know, kind of thing. But it was a little bit different, and the crowd would just pop over something silly like that, which I thought was funny.
The Littles were always over in KEW, but they, you know, I always felt like that was kind of KEW's Dudley Boys to some degree.
It was. I worked with it was Biddy and what was the other ones when I went to Rampage Championship Wrestling in Jonesboro. It was considered one of the worst wrestling shows ever, believe it or not. And I had my tag team over there, but I actually worked with them. And one of the Littles of the bunch was the one that booked everything.
Mm.
He was pretty smart at what he was doing, but just didn't. I mean, the crew was so green, and we were just all horrible. So, I mean, there might have been, you know, a few people that was good, but they are now. If you think about some of the people, the crew, they're pretty good. But back then, we were just all really green. All right, let's take a quick commercial. We'll be right back with the rest of this. And Gene and I are going to answer: was this really that good? All right, back with my old buddy Gene Jackson. Next up was a Pete Gask, a quick promo talking about the main event. The main event was Daniel Bryan, Joey Abs, and he was talking about Joey Abs and riding with him and everything. I thought it was a decent interview, wasn't it, but man, just on that damn Pete Gask, now he was a damn good looking man, wasn't he?
Yeah, like, I mean, I was really surprised, because I just remember him being the, you know, the chubby guy in the sweater vest and WWE with Shane McMahon. And so to see him, you know, in a singlet and actually looking kind of built and actually able to wrestle was quite shocking. You know, I knew Joey Abs had some, you know, background in North Carolina and, you know, had a little bit of, you know, of a wrestling background to him. But, you know, Pete Gass had come a long way from the guy I remembered seeing on WWE TV. And
I think it's the same old thing where we see them in NXT sometimes, and then they bring them up to main roster, and it's not the same guy. I mean, they had a hell of a gimmick, and I know people remember that gimmick and remember those guys, but you see them here, and they're workers, which is kind of surprising. So the next match was Rod Rages. He was the TV champ against Spellbinder. Now, Rod Rages was become Rodney in the WWF when him and Pete Gass came in as Shane McMahon's friends.
Yeah, you know, he was the less impressive of the three. Like I say, you know, Pete Gass and Joey Abs, when I seen them on, I'm like, wow, these guys look like wrestlers. They look good. And then Rod Rages, from the name to the look to the gear, like, he is like the quintessential 2000s wrestler. Like, that's the kind of shit they were wearing, like stuff that you got at the mall from, like, at the time, I guess it was at Gadzook's place. Now it would be like Pacific Sunwear or whatever it's called. But, like, just, I don't know. Like, I hated everything about his look, just the whole thing. I was like, oh, like, this sucks. Like, this is everything I hated about wrestling, like, in 2000, 2001, that whole era.
It looked like Superstar Billy Graham or somebody like that, or Jesse Ventura was like his favorite wrestler. I looked him up. It looks like him and Pete Gass was actually, as much as, you know, I get all my information from Wikipedia, so we know that everything on there is true, were actually childhood friends of Shane. Now, Joey Abs, who later joined them, was not really a childhood fan, but apparently these two guys were. I was not impressed with Roger Aegis or what the hell his name was. He wrestled Spellbinder, who he would be a hell of a guy to bring on the podcast to talk and what he would tell if he would shoot. What is your overall? I'm going to give you my opinion and what I disliked about Spellbinder, but what was your overall opinion, you know, of Spellbinder? He was always was one of the top guys, or at least to the bottom, from, you know, maybe the semi-main to the main event, guys in the Memphis area.
I don't, you know, I remember him starting out in USWA when he, you know, when he had the face paint and he did the little, you know, dollar store magic tricks before the matches and stuff. And I don't know, that kind of like, I saw him at a live event in like Smithville, Mississippi, and was impressed by him, you know, and thought, well, he'll probably go somewhere. And, you know, he did, you know, pop up briefly in WWF. I mean, you probably only know that if you saw it on WrestleCrap. But he evolved from the original Spellbinder character to later on in Power Pro, like a Scott Steiner knockoff. And he could kind of talk when he, you know, when he wanted to, but I don't know. It was like, to me, there was always just something missing about him that I couldn't quite put my finger on, that just didn't, it wasn't all there. Like, you know, he wasn't a bad wrestler or anything, but I don't know. There was just something about him that was missing that I never was a big fan of his. Like, I don't know. The only memorable thing for me is the whole, you know, Brian Christopher skit and Power Pro, which I'm sure we can cover sometime on Doug Gilbert and Tommy Rich.
Just an awesome skit. You know what got me with him? He has a hell of a backstory, and I believe my buddies at P3 Radio interviewed him about when he went to the WWE and what that was all about, which was kind of interesting. But you know, he was shot at one time. Still has the scar where he was actually shot in the street and almost died. And he's just a big guy. Here's the funny thing about me is I absolutely marked out for the Spellbinder gimmick that he used in WWE. And from the point I saw that till I seen him the last time he wrestled, I always thought, keep doing that fucking gimmick. I don't know why. I just loved it. And he didn't do it. He did change his gimmick. I think the reason his interviews were not good and was not for the Memphis and market was he had that thick fucking accent.
Sound like Taz. Or something.
Yeah, almost like Taz in a sense that, I think it was worse. It's just so thick. Now, anybody that knows him as a person outside the business or inside the business, the friends that I have, mutual friends of his, they can't say anything but good things about Spell. And so, you know, as a worker, he wasn't great, but he did look like a wrestler, where a lot of those guys didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was funny as they were working. The match was kind of sloppy, but it was okay. But Bradley was at ringside with Victoria, and he called David Jett a Steve Bradley mark. And I loved that. He said, yeah, you're a Steve Bradley mark. He says, you're not supposed to say that on TV or something. He said, well, there's some things you can't say on TV. And then Bradley said something, and they bleeped him. He said, can I say that? And
Jay was like, yeah, I got that.
No, I can't say that. He said, can I say this? They went, beep. He goes, no, you can't say that. Their towns were Perigo, Arkansas. There was a little town in Tennessee. It's B-O-O-G-T-A. What would that be? Bogota? I don't know. Tennessee. Manila, Arkansas. Rector, Arkansas. The funny thing is I've wrestled in or managed in Perico, Manila, and Rector. So their last match, our main event, which they talked about during that, which I thought was really good, really putting over that we had Daniel Bryan against Joey Abs, and I know they didn't call him Daniel Bryan. I can't even remember what they called him.
He was just American Dragon at that point. Sans the mask, because I think it was Cade had pulled it off of him, I think, or something like that, they said.
I can't remember. No, I remember him in the mask and watching some of those matches. and then taping it, and then all of a sudden he didn't have the mask. So, you know, back in the day, if you missed the show, you didn't know what the fuck was going on until, you know, you read it somewhere. So,
yeah.
I can't remember. Very fast-paced match. You could tell those two guys were working out together when it came to, you know, MCW and putting up the ring. They probably worked each other before everything. Daniel Bryan was still so fucking good, even back then. You know, Shawn Michaels says he was a star of the school. Spanky was also very good. I thought the match was really fast-paced, real good. These matches on this show, and I think this was the only match that I actually seen a double down, was just not a lot of psychology, but just a lot of action. It reminded me of the stuff that's so popular today, you know, that the guys were just working so fucking hard to try to get over. And that's what they were doing. We didn't even mention Justin Sensation was out there for Daniel Bryan and Spanky's match. But what'd you think about this match? Jason Sensation, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jason Sensation, who, yeah, like you thought, you would have figured he'd have got some mic time or something. You know, I mean, he was known for his impressions, especially his Owen Hart impression, and just no mic time at all for him. He was just kind of there. I was impressed with the match because Daniel Bryan at this point in his career, you know, like I say, very green, very young, but you could tell like he was the general of the match. Like he was leading the match. He looked like a veteran, the way he worked, the way he didn't back down from the larger guy at certain points. Like, I don't know. He looked, you know, seasoned way beyond his years watching that match in my opinion. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, today's TV style of wrestling started in this era. This is where you can trace it back to here. And that's what they were doing, was what would become the WWE TV style matches. And I know, I thought it was kind of fun that I noticed the old shotgun Saturday night aprons as well on the side of the ring. But yeah, it just stood out. Like, through Ring of Honor, through watching these old matches, through watching some DVDs I traded for back in the day of the Texas Wrestling Academy, there's no point where Bryan Danielson does not look like a seasoned, well-trained wrestler. Like, there's never a time where you're like, God, he was green as shit. That looked terrible. Like, everything he did looked good.
I thought so, too. I just, I was always a fan. I liked American Dragon. I was a fan of Shawn Michaels and loved it that he trained some guys. I thought all those guys in that school, around that school, were really, really good. I thought the ending of this was kind of shitty. He pinned Daniel Bryan, and then a bunch of heels jumped in, and Abs was just horrible at his punches.
Yes.
He kind of like was given a forearm. A trivia thing on Joey Abs. He was the first person to take the Stone Cold Stunner.
Really?
There you go. The very first person ever.
That's fun.
All right. So it ended up talking about something called Showdown at the Nut House that was from Jonesboro, Arkansas. And I'm going to have to go back and try to, or go forward, but go back and figure out what the hell that was all about. But next week, the next show that came up after this week, the main event was Kurt Angle against Triple H. And then they showed clips of the Haas brothers winning the Southern Tag Team titles and them getting jumped by, I know it was Seven. I think he said John Sick, but I don't remember John.
No, it was Scott Vick, who had been Sick Boy in Raven Lock. That's who that was. Yeah, I had to rewind it and watch it again to catch the name. And I thought, that name sounds familiar, so I Googled it. And yeah, he had been Sick Boy in the Flock. He ended up going, after WCW, he ended up going into the WWE developmental and never really made it to the main roster or anything. But yeah, that's who that was.
You know, that was something else that Brian had brought up, and I didn't even say anything, but it really didn't matter, guys, when and you know this, but some of our listeners may be too young to even know it, but this was developmental. This was one of their first places that they did developmental, and they were all paid by the WWE, everybody from Ring Crew on, and Terry Golden and everybody, and it didn't really matter whether they had 20 people or 30 people. I do know at some of these shows, they just went around giving tickets away just to put people in because it really didn't matter. But the funny thing is that they worked their asses off because they were trying to get better, which I really liked that part of it. But this was a little mixture of some of those guys that was at KEW like Biddy Little, developmental, and I could see as a booker, you know, all of a sudden they're wanting to bring somebody in and it fucks everything up. But you got to think that Terry Golden was sitting on a gold mine but just booking these towns and making a living doing this.
Absolutely. And, you know, another little thing I noticed about this show as well, you know, in that main event, there was a different referee and there was like a couple of other referees that got bumped at the end. But for the whole rest of the show, including the previous match they showed, William Gibson was the referee for every match. I was like, damn, did they not have any other referees? But then later on, I don't know if they got to the show late or what, but towards the end, there were some other referees to surface. But other than that, William Gibson was carrying the load. And I know he had put on Facebook, you know, he had watched this episode, and I'm sure he'll probably listen to this. So I just wanted to shout out.
Yeah, I mentioned Will. That's the first thing I saw. I was like, damn, he's young.
Yeah.
all right. So, Gene, was it really that good?
You know, we really haven't said anything bad about the show, but like when it ended last night, I was like, you know, when I finished that Power Pro episode from before, I went and watched several more Power Pro episodes. But after watching this one, like I really wasn't like excited to go watch more or anything. Like, so I'm going to say it was really pretty good, but I didn't think it was great. Like I didn't love it.
I actually liked it. I'm the opposite. I want to watch more because of what they showed the clips of. I want to find that Pete Gasty rally match. And then I wanted to go and figure out why the number one, I want to ask somebody why they called it Showdown at the Nut House. We're talking about because Arkansas State had their coach's last name was Nut. I think maybe that was it. I don't know. But Angle against Triple H back then, you know, and I've told the story where I said I didn't think Kurt Angle was going to be a superstar. Boy, man, I could pick him.
And great the shit Hustle, on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I shit big time. Oh, I said Stasiak was going to be the star of this group, so he wasn't even with them. I love the Haas brothers, by the way. I like them a lot. So it'll be I'm going to go back and try to find some stuff. Next time, I don't know exactly what we're going to watch, but I know it's got something to do with ROH. So just stick in there with us. And ROH has a very rich history of great, fantastic matches. If I can find us something, a pay-per-view or even just a TV show, we'll sit down and watch and see, was it really that great? Are really that good? I always fuck up the name of my own podcast. All right, guys, same bat time, same bat channel on the best little wrestling podcast in the business. Be there. And as you know, I love my mama.